Ladies and gentlemen, today is the first day of the rest of your life. And now, listen in as Tristan and Johnny bring it all to the table on the Vision Board Podcast.
Welcome back, guys. Episode 81 of the Vision Board Podcast. I'm Tristan Cannell, and Johnny Stofko joins me.
What's up, guys? We're coming from Sydney, Australia, with one of Sydney's own little Australian celebrity. Who are we talking to today, Tristan?
Steve Willis, a.k.a. Commando Steve.
Yeah, this guy, man, you know, we were talking off the record, off air. I'm walking through Wynyard Station. He's on buses. You know, you're seeing him on TV, books, fitness products. It seems like the guy has his fingertips in a lot of different you know, things, all things related to fitness.
Definitely. You know, for our American listeners, Steve is the equivalent of someone like Jillian Michaels. So Jillian Michaels is the Biggest Loser trainer in America. Steve is our celebrity trainer here in Australia, and with his partner too, Michelle Bridges. They do it together on the Channel 10 here in Australia, and it's one of the biggest shows, one of the biggest rating shows in Australia, and it's something that has come down from America here into Australia, and you know, it's great guns, and he's very recognizable in this country.
Once again, an example of a successful male, boy, man with a, you know, equally successful partner. It goes back to that point of putting yourself around good people, and also the importance of having somebody in terms of companionship pushing you with an equal to, you know, at equal type of, what am I trying to say here? Portfolio as well, right? Michelle is just as...
Huge. Michelle's probably the number one. She's probably the highest profile trainer in Australia.
Yeah, so that has to be good for both of them to keep pushing each other.
Absolutely. And he's on his own path. He would probably be in the top five himself. So
he's actually living
the combination,
it.
Yeah. He's...
In comparison to, like, guys, you're not. He's not one of these Instagram models, like, buy my 10-week course. This dude, what, special ops, military, he's a coach. He was a coach before the show. He's a coach now, and he's actually walking that walk, and, you know, I'm excited to interview him, and hopefully we'll be able to get that side of him out for you guys listening at home.
I think the inside, you know, the guy who is Steve Willis, you know, I kind of already know who that Commando Steve guy is. You know, he's always he's interviewed a lot. He's on, you know, the Biggest Loser constantly. Now I kind of want to get, you know, what we, me and you do, we get behind the scenes and we get to see who the insights and who that real person is, you know what I mean? Like, because let's be honest, you know, being on a show, it must be really, really difficult to show your true self and show your true personality, especially a show like that where it's just a limited sort of scope in terms of you dealing with someone that's trying to lose weight and them kind of being the main focus while you are trying to instruct them to try and train. So sometimes you might not get the true personality. So I'm really intrigued to see him in person, get to meet him in real life, and just to get to see who Steve really is.
Interesting. Could you share and explain to our American audience who might not know Commando Steve's character on TV just before we get him on? So if he is exactly the same, our American audience will be able to decipher. And if he's different, well, we've done our job then, because our American audience wouldn't really know who he was to have anything to compare what they're about to hear too.
Yeah, well, Steve comes from a, you know, military background, so I think they've kind of used that to create a bit of a character for him on the actual show, where he's, you know, the, especially when he first came on the scene, I think it's kind of mellowed down a little bit as the season's gone.
Six
on
of them, I think.
A little bit. I think it's like six. I think 2005, 2006. I think it might have came on. So even more than that, it might be something like 9 or 10 seasons, maybe. But at the start, he was that real sort of, you know, bad cop, so that asshole guy that would come on and he would, you know, really belt the clients up, you know. And I think that was the kind of personality they were trying to get across. They really needed someone to fill that void. And yeah, it'll be really interesting to see. Yeah, because I've seen I've read a couple of interviews, and now he's doing a little crossover work with his 9-year-old daughter, and it's good to see that sort of side of him. So I'm really intrigued to see if he's going to speak about his family and just that sort of life and what he does beyond the show.
What do you mean, like, crossover work with his daughter?
So his daughter does, she's kind of very, very interesting character.
The 9-year-old?
Yeah, the 9-year-old.
She has a profile?
So there's these watches they've made for kids.
Garmin?
And yeah, I think it's Garmin. And they have, I've got it written down, just give me a moment. And she's kind of like the ambassador for it.
Oh, really?
She's 9 years old. Like, it's kind of crazy. And she's up on a lot of billboards. I saw one on Edgecliff Station the other day, her and her dad dressed in the exact same outfit.
Are you serious? I didn't know that.
Just to explain to everyone at home, he wears his black singlet, his kind of tank top, and then he's got his camouflage pants. So he's got that. That's his get-up gear.
Hat?
No, not usually.
Okay.
But, yeah, so that's his get-up. So it'll be interesting to see... And what he arrives in today, Hope he's pretty chill.
Yeah, we're bringing him into our health club here in Sydney, Australia. Tristan and I, it's one of these awesome experiences where we're doing it in person, and we'll get to parade him through the club. You know,
you're right, Johnny. Garmin.
So it is Garmin.
Garmin.
Yeah, there you go. Garmin, I know, you know, I'm not a spokesman for the brand, but, you know, we do our due diligence there. And it's cool to see that it's not one of the, I don't have children, so I don't know what perspective I would come from a stance of being in the public's eye and then having my children in the public's eye. But I guess in a country like Australia, which you don't really have to deal with paparazzi that much, do you?
Not a huge amount. And I think it's kind of promoting some really healthy things.
So she's actually not just a spokesgirl or model for a brand. Is it like a movement for children?
Well, I saw her the other day on, you know, the Today Show, the morning show on Channel 9. And she was down on the beach, and she had to take the hosts through a workout on the beach, and she's screaming at him, and she's like, what? She's doing the Commando Steve just in her sort of version. It was pretty cool.
Awesome.
It was really nice to see her get involved and seeing that, you know, the fitness sort of lifestyle is running through the family.
Yeah, I'm excited to be to have him on. And speaking of versions, we always talk about the best versions of ourselves. This episode of the Vision Board Podcast is brought to you by Onnit. Onnit is a total human optimization brand. If you're interested in stepping your game up, go to our website, www.thevisionboardpodcast.com/onnit. You'll be able to see all their products that will help you assist in your evolution. They have a bunch of merchandise, a bunch of tools of the game, you know, kettlebells, maces. When you're proceeding to the checkout, use code word VISIONBOARD to receive 10% off of all your purchases.
Definitely. Get the buffalo bars, guys. I've got a couple boxes of
those. Jalapeno gangster.
I ran out of my freaking alpha brain this morning.
I can't tell, man. You know, we're doing this right now. Tristan just got the unboxing, got the hands wrapped. Inspiring. It seems like you're on your A game today.
I'm going back after this, man.
Yeah, you left the gloves near the heavy bag, man. The right hook. Actually, I was just watching you shadow box. That left, jumping left hook that you're throwing like a jab was very Roy Jones-esque in his prime.
Look, I lie, I'm Roy Jones.
Yeah, he is Roy Jones. He only masquerades as Tristan Cannell. So are you gonna fight soon? Are you planning to fight together? Because the way you are, you wouldn't tell me even if you were. I found out from like the media.
We'll see. Maybe for charity next year.
You should do it, man. The kids are savage. You'd have all of our support.
We'll see what happens. Oh, thank you, Johnny.
Yeah, how them abs looking, man? You've been downloading our
ebook. Not as good as yours.
Hey, man. I'm a body types and everything. You know, I'm old.
Yeah, you've got some really good genetics, my man.
I'm not saying that.
You work your ass off. Yeah. And guys, he's put together. Both of us have put together our ebook. It's a free download on our website. Just teach you the little ad program that me and Johnny use on a weekly basis. A little sample meal plan in there for you. It's about 3 pages, so it's quite short. So it's really easy to read and really easy to access. All you got to do is go to the homepage, www.thevisionboardpodcast.com. Just scroll down. There's a little page where you can just enter your name and your email. We'll send that shoot straight to you. Alternatively, there also is a tab, ebook. So all you got to do is just click on there. Same thing. Name, email, shoot the same thing to you. If there's been any problems, guys, if you haven't received your ebook, either check your junk mail, or if it's not in the junk mail, just shoot us a quick email at info@thevisionboardpodcast.com, and we will shoot you your copy.
Yeah, man, great, well put. It's very efficient. It's very quick. It's also an awesome way to stay in the loop with upcoming guests and get on our newsletter. It takes 10 seconds. Other than that, get ready to bring it.
Here is Steve Willis, a.k.a. The Commando.
Yeah, buddy.
Okay, our special guest is Steve Willis, a.k.a. Commando Steve. Steve is a former team commander with the Australian Special Forces, where he has become a very familiar face in Australia since his role as a trainer on Australia's Biggest Loser. He's got a regular column on Body and Soul magazine. He has a book, No Excuses, while he also runs his popular Commando Fit training camps right around Australia. We welcome Steve Willis. Steve.
Morning, boys. How are you both?
Doing great. Thanks so much for stopping in, my man.
No, not a problem. It's great to be here. Actually, the sound of here in the gym of someone doing slam balls above my head.
Yeah, we're definitely, guys listening at home, Tristan and I are going through a transitional phase working on different studios, so we're recording this from our health club in Sydney, Australia, under the powerlifting platforms. So we'll hopefully be able to edit that stuff out. Like Tristan aforementioned, Steve, appreciate your time. Time is the most valuable asset that we have that we can never get back. So thank you for sharing this space with us. So, you know, we've seen your face and heard your name in magazines, books, on TV with the show. Could you share with your fans and with the audience a little bit about something that you're currently working on that maybe we don't know about?
Gosh, currently in a personal sense or more of a professional sense?
Let's think it's professional for now. Maybe something in the industry. Are you still, you know, in the fitness industry, your mission with helping people?
Okay, yeah, so that mission with helping people firstly stems from my own personal journey and being the better version of myself or the best version of myself possible. And the reasons for that is so that I can then be of greater value or assistance to those that that need my help, that need our help. And, you know, there's no point you being on the racetrack, driving the car around, and then going to the pub and telling your mates how fantastic it was. Yeah. You want them there on the racetrack with you. And that's what I'm all about, is that service to others. And I think a lot of that resonates from my younger years in the military, and it's carried through. But it's only been, you know, now that I'm a little older that that I've connected with it. So being the best version of myself possible and what that looks like so I can be of greater service to others. And that's whether, you know, I'm on a TV show and that platform to, you know, an online program, you know, or training someone face to face, or, you know, as you just said, the camps that I run.
Was there ever a sense that before the show, before you started filming, did you have to audition? Did they reach out to you? And then if you did have to audition, were you able to look around at your fellow competition, I guess, other guys who auditioned, and felt that you already had it, or were you nervous, or what was that process like?
Well, it all happened so quickly. So I had made a conscious choice at the end of 2003, start of 2004, to leave the military.
Yeah.
And what that looked like, I was unsure. But something that I'd carried with myself ever since I was young, or a part of me that was my identity through my younger years into the military and then in that decision to leave, was my training. That was something that I had hung on to. So I, in the transition, I thought, you know, I enjoy training. What better way to whittle your day by training and then, you know, train some other people and help them have a better quality of life.
Yeah.
So I did my courses, you know, as you know, most PTs do, Cert 3, Cert 4 here in Australia, and, you know, any other qualifications, and then started working as a trainer. Within a year of leaving the army, I found myself on The Biggest Loser. But the process was, I was presented with an opportunity. So some guys that I'd been in the army with knew the casting agent, and the casting agent had been tasked by the production company to find someone who was like ex-military and now a trainer. And then my mate said, you know, this guy's, you know, leaving the army, why don't you give him a bell? And
yeah.
I remember sitting in the car, I was actually driving to the gym that I was working at, receiving the call, and I was like, man, this is an opportunity of a lifetime, as scared as I was, because I had no idea what television was about. I had never done any formal training or anything like that.
Have you ever
done
any photo shoots before, getting comfortable with the camera on you at all?
No, other than, you know, standing in the school rugby photo
and
picture or something like that.
Yeah. What year was that?
So that was 2005.
Wow.
So I did an interview with the production company, and then it was just, you know, jumped through the hoops from there. And, you know, as you were saying, there was a number of other trainers and the like that had been kind of selected from around Australia that, you know, went through the process. I had to train one of my clients on camera. Then we all came together at what was the original, or the house that they first used for The Biggest Loser. And we did like a train the trainer on the front yard. Front lawn. So
did Michelle take you? Or?
Well, Michelle was there. You know, yeah, Shannon was there. There was a handful of others there.
Yeah.
But my point of difference was being ex-military, whereas none of the others were. And there was one of the executive producers, Paul Franklin, who I think he had this vision, this idea of a trainer being a part of the show that did give that point of difference. He was unsure of what that exactly looked like. But, you know, I showed up there. They said, oh, you know, can you put your camo gear on? So I had the cut off, you know, the camo shorts, and I got the shirt and I cut the sleeves off it, you know, kind of the look. And I just started using the military tactics of training on the other trainers and, you know, doing dead man drags across the lawn and the like. And they were all of a sudden, yeah, this is what we're looking for. So, you know, the process for Shannon and Michelle was there. They were the lead trainers. They kind of were under the wing of Bob and Gillian for that first season. All the while, no one knew that I was off in the background training two contestants. So Michelle and Shannon didn't even have an idea that, that I was kind of in the peripheries putting these contestants through their paces. And then at points within the show, I was brought in to train contestants in the night or just do random stuff to just create some chaos.
You were the
bad
guy.
Bad guy, come on now. But you could look at it like that. Good cop, essentially, bad guy. You know, in the sense of just to shake things up. And again, looking at it, you know, any TV show, it's about entertainment.
Yeah. Absolutely.
And first and foremost, you know, what can we do to entertain the viewer? And you've got contestants that are on The Biggest Loser. Their lives, yes, have fallen apart in some way, shape, or form.
Yep.
It's the trainer's jobs to help them, you know, get back on track in some way and work on being a better version of themselves. But for me, it was to just be that curveball, create a bit of unrest and really challenge people's why, you know, their motives being there, and to just, you know, apply some more pressure, which, you know, I thoroughly enjoyed. But as the years went by, the production wanted me to come on in a more full-time capacity. So I recognised myself, you couldn't just be that commando with the sunglasses on and not saying too much. And when you did, you were just barking orders because people would get sick of that, you know, watching that every day. It's just like, who is this guy?
Definitely.
So the personal side of me had to come out a little bit. So essentially what you got on television at the start was that army guy. You know, draw the line, you're in or you're out. This is the expectation. Let's go. And then over time, as it evolved and I had my own team and I was alongside Shannon and Michelle, that process of communication and kind of holding the contestants' hands for a period of time to get them to a point where the habits that you wanted them to reinforce were being reinforced and they could do it themselves.
Yeah, that just one sec. Just that little name, Commando.
Mm.
Did you stick that on yourself or was there
that's a whole something that I to or? This day. So I served again in what is now known as the 2nd Commando Regiment in Sydney or out at Holsworthy.
Yeah.
God, I honestly don't know. Because we went through the whole the show used the Commando because it's like the Stig. You know, there's an unknown entity or quantity to that. It's just this guy with sunglasses on. Who is he really?
Yeah.
But for myself, in outside of television and on the ground day to day, I recognized that going by the Commando was probably creating too big a hurdle for people to overcome. Like, there's that apprehension and that fear that, you know, I want to train with him, but I'm unsure. So adding the Steve adds that personal component, Commando Steve.
Yeah.
So it's been an evolutionary process, which, back at the start, again, I can't remember. I think it was a part to do with the show, me having been in the military in a Commando, and they just thought, that's a great name. You know, that I remember sitting in my initial interview, funnily enough, with the producer, and he said to me, so what do you want to call yourself if you get on the show? You know, something like Sergeant Slaughter. So remember,
wrestling.
Now I just thought of not the commander, but with Arnold Schwarzenegger when he goes into the jungle Predator. Remember in the helicopter and you got the guy with the slouch hat on and he's got the cigar in his mouth with the big heavy machine gun. Yeah. I thought, yes,
great movie,
Steve. So, for the young coaches out there getting into the industry, I know it was over a decade ago, but if you can remember your mindset before you got the call and the opportunity to go on that show when you were a new coach, a new PT, figuring your way through this industry, do you feel that it was something that was it a momentum thing that you were working on yourself even before that offer that led to that offer? And if it was, could you share that and the importance and significance of that with younger coaches listening out there?
I truly believe, you know, and I get the question around nutrition and training and the like. Oh, how do you do this? How do you do that? How do you maintain your motivation? All of these questions. First and foremost, it's been ingrained since I was young. The habit is there. To do anything other than, that's abnormal.
Mm.
So for me, it's the software running in the background. So rewind back to my teens and the like, and sport and school and after school, and always, you know, looking at, you know, Arnold Schwarzenegger was a major hero of mine. You know, a role model. You know, the likes of Bruce Lee, all those guys who were just carving their path, and they were doing it regardless of whether it was the trendy thing to be doing. Right. As a young guy, I just feel that I connected with them in that sense. I was willing, and I would say it to my contestants on The Biggest Loser, it comes down to, would you be willing to do what you're doing if the lights were off, the doors were closed, and no one else is around? If the passion is that strong and that great, and that's what, do it. Yeah, and for me, that's what it was. You know, training, the gym, in the military, on top of all the military training that we had to do, I still did my own training.
Yeah.
And even some of my mates and people I've been with in the military to this day, when I meet someone, you know, just in the street, they have known someone that I know, they say, yeah, Steve's the guy that would just do his thing as well. And what that really set was the foundation for the craft of training people. I was my own human guinea pig.
Yeah.
You know, I had an idea. I kind of liked what, say, Arnold Schwarzenegger was doing, or someone else reading one of the magazines, and I would apply the principles. I would see if it worked for me. I wasn't just making having an opinion, whether that be a subjective opinion or not, around in the moment, I was just like taking it on face value. I would, all right, they say this, I'm going to apply it and see if it works for me. If it works for me, then I'm going to utilize it. And for me, in that transition, again, there was a whole lot of other stuff going on, and I was introduced to CrossFit. Now, you think a special forces soldier,
yeah,
you know, there's a fair amount of ego, because there isn't too many people, guys, that that make it into the special forces anywhere in the world. Like the percentage of the overall population,
probably less than 1% of the
world. It's quite small.
Yeah.
So you think you're kind of 10 foot tall and bulletproof.
Yeah.
And then one of my mates says to me, "Oh, have you heard of this CrossFit stuff?" And I was like, "No." And he goes, "We should give it a go." And I was like, I was thinking to myself, you know, I'm fit enough. I can run. I can lift weights and do all of that. I don't need that stuff. And then a few weeks later, he says to me, "Have you done anything, any of it yet?" And I was like, "No." And he goes, "Let's do a workout." 20 minutes of working out, and I spent the next hour in the fetal position trying to figure out what the freaking hell had happened to me. And I'd spent 10 years jumping out of planes, you know, fast roping out of helicopters, you know, blowing things up, shooting things up. And I did a little 20-minute pissy workout that landed me on my ass. Yeah. I was definitely in the sympathetic, nervous system in the fetal position on the ground.
Was your intent when you started coaching people and helping people, was your intent ever to become famous?
To be open and honest, ever since I was young.
Because everyone I ask who is at that level, they all talk about in one way or another visualizing or seeing something.
Yes.
And that's what I wanted to ask you, and it's meant to be an inspirational question.
When I was young, and I'm talking really young, I must have, 6, 7, 8 years of age. I used to have this, would you call it a vision? Of standing up in front of people and talking to them.
That's awesome.
And I can still picture exactly the same thing to this day. There isn't any clarity around a person's face or where I am, but it's almost like I'm on a stage and there's just people in an auditorium. And that was there when I was young. And and that's why people ask me about the military as well. Why did you leave? Because I felt there was more to life. Okay. And a lot of that was always ticking over in the back of my mind, and thinking about my upbringing and the military and life to this point in time, that was all a rehearsal. It was teaching me the necessary lessons to, I believe, you know, what's occurring for me at this point in time. There's a shift coming, there's a change. And that's exciting. At the same time, it's very daunting, because at the moment, I am in myself feeling pretty scared about things, because like the book The Alchemist, for those that have read it, so it's a full circle, and I messaged Paulo last week
and he actually messaged me back, like, I had no, because he's got like 30 million followers on Facebook or something, so I said I might just give this a crack, I might send him a message,
yeah,
see what he says. And but I'll show you this message from him. But
back to the alchemist, so the alchemist and the path and coming full circle. Continue, Steve. I'm interested in your feedback.
Yeah, because a lot of what I was doing when I was younger, and just that almost that stoic approach.
Yeah.
It's understanding emotion and feelings, which you don't do so much when you're young because you lack life experience.
See, that's from Polo. Like, he was one of my heroes when I finished his book, and it's like
context. I give that book, I give The Alchemist to people that I feel could use it, and then your sister gave it to you as a gift.
Yeah, as a Christmas present.
Last year.
Mm.
Yeah, and you finally read it.
But I just, you know how sometimes people, you think, well, he's so big, he won't write back to me.
Yeah, yeah.
But he had, but
he's,
you know,
he's a guy like any one of us, and that's. But back to the and emotion and feelings, and a lot is, you know, a lot happens for all of us. It's whether we're tuned into it or not, and we allow, we apply. Well, ignorance is not knowing better. Ignoramus is knowing better, but not doing anything about it.
Mm.
And but you know, from when I was really young, my natural father left. I guess as a young guy, looking at my two sons now. As much as girls crave that attention and that nurturing, so do boys.
Yeah.
I'm telling you from an early... And my boys probably more so than my daughters.
Well, I'm the biggest mummy boy ever.
And
no, from your father, though. From the masculine energy. Yeah, the masculine
my
energy.
Boys are always... Point. For yeah, sure. My boys are always wanting a hug. Always,
is that something you speak to them quite a bit? Like, me and my dad have probably created more of a relationship over the last 10 years since I've been an adult, but no more since I was a child. Do they come to you for advice and things like that yet?
My boys? Well, yeah, they're still pretty young. So Axel only coming up to a year.
You're talking the developmental stages, though, being a boy,
like,
for
like
sure.
It's innate. You know,
it's like an un... it's a non-verbal attraction to the little baby's father, the needing and necessity of having that.
Yeah.
And I think if that wasn't there.
Well, that's where you tend to go within yourself.
How old's your eldest?
So my eldest daughter is, she'll be 18 soon.
Yep.
And then, so she just finished her school. HSC.
Wow.
And then that there's Ella, who's 8, going on 9 in January. Then Jack, who's 5. So he's starting school next year. And then Axel, who's coming up to a year. So, you know, it's quite a big... And I think for myself, everyone goes, oh, wow, how do you do it? And I think there's a reason for all of this happening. Yeah. What is life is showing me things that I need to tune into. What am I tuning into and what are the lessons that I'm getting from it? You know, there's a plethora of reasons and lessons and all of those things. But at the end of the day, it's what you take from it and your willingness to look at it. And life is, there is pain, there is suffering, there is fear. And when we admit that to self and we immerse ourselves in it, we recognize, you know, it gets gritty, it gets hard. You know, there is that fear, being scared, and just...
I think we need that.
We do need
to evolve. Like Les Brown has a quote, inspiration through desperation. To consistently evolve and grow and become better, you have to put yourself... on those skinny branches. You can't stay on the trunk the whole time. Because if you do, you get comfortable, and through comfortability comes no growth.
No growth at all.
And that's exactly right. It's comfort zones and margins of experience. And Greg Glassman, the founder of CrossFit, talks, you know, a lot about that. You know, the ring bark's on a tree. And if you take the world and that's a big circle, and then your comfort zone and your little circle, unless you're willing to step out into those peripheries and experience new things, there is no growth. And we fail at the margins of our experience. And, you know, that really comes down to, again, what drives people and what it is that they want to achieve in life. But with that mindfulness and that ability through action and experience, you have the opportunity to reflect. Because if you sit around and you don't do anything, what are you going to reflect on? Not doing anything? And a lot of what happens then is, we project those shortcomings, the things that we aren't doing outwardly, onto other people, and we tend to pull people down rather than prop them up and look at the things that they're doing and use them as inspiration and motivation to drive your own life in the direction that you want it.
Yeah.
But that's... But for me, it's... Yeah, gosh, there's so much going on here, and it's trying... And again, this is what I'm like a lot when I do keynotes and things like that.
Yeah.
I like to get into a flow and talk, and I like questions from people. I like engagement. I don't want to just talk to or at people, because a lot of the time, what happens then, it just goes over their head.
Yeah.
And you want them excited. You want them involved.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, you were talking about what we're putting out there and what we're attracting. The law of attraction, man, it's a law. They're not the law of gravity. Things go up, it's a law. That's why it's called a law. And things how we think, and without getting too gurus, Buddhists talk about how we are all gods because how we feel and what we think becomes our reality, and that's what we attract. So in your life right now, Steve, what are you, where do you see yourself and wanting to attract for the next 12 months?
The next 12 months.
Let's keep it to your your brand. With your brand, how you want to grow it, how many people are you looking at, like, globally? Are you looking to stay within Australia? Are there any huge plans that maybe your fans don't know about, something like that?
At the moment, it's been quite tumultuous, as I was saying, with what's going on and just the pace in which technology is evolving. And we've had an online program for a period of time. And back to The Alchemist, I to a degree have identified with that, and it's like I probably my delivery, and I believe my best work is done face to face through the medium of online. Like there can be quite a disconnect, and again, having been called the Commando Steve, there is a certain hurdle which I find people need to overcome. But once they're immersed and they're willing to commit, they go, wow, like, you know, what it is that you're saying, and, you know, the foundation, the framework that you've got in place, it really works. And it's like anything, though, you know, it comes back to our level of commitment. So for me, you're getting back on the ground, you know, being in front of people more. And I'm not just talking, I'm talking the everyday person, you know, even to the lower socioeconomic areas, because I feel that in this day and age, well, it's through the history of time, but they're very much taken advantage of. And everything that we've just spoken about, helping people connect with self and have a better relationship with themselves, so that they can be that sense of self-empowered. So many of us live externally to ourselves. We're taught that from an early age. And living externally in the superficial world, we believe that the fix to anything is external to us. If I buy this, if I do that, it all comes from within, and it's your willingness to show up and with consistency, you know, deal with the gritty, deal with the uncomfortable, get outside your comfort zone and grow. And then over time, you reinforce the habit, and that habit runs in the background whilst you're mindful and focusing on other things. Because there's only two ways of doing something, and that's reinforcing a positive feedback loop or a negative feedback loop. Which one are you in right now? Admit it to self and work on changing it if it's a negative and you want to shift into a positive. And it'll take time. It's not going to happen in a week, even a month, even 6 months. It could take a year, you know. And again, back to The Alchemist. You know, they went on a journey.
Yeah, a big journey.
You know, think nowadays we've got cars and boats and planes and the internet and all of those things that can take us on a journey. You know, that was a hard journey.
Through the desert.
Yeah, all of that stuff. And that's in essence is life. So, and that's a lot of the space that I'm working in. So whether that be helping someone just to eat better or in the sense of improving their physiological well-being or in an organic sense, what is our nature as a human? Who owns a dog? And you know, ask yourself the question about the dog: what is the nature of my dog? We can pretty much carve out a left and right, you know, parameter or bracket and put the dog and what it means, what you identify a dog as. You're not asking that dog to be any more or any less. But then what is our nature? What are the necessities, the things to sustain human life?
Yeah.
And what is true self and what is ego? You know, and this is getting quite Buddhist and Zen and all of these things, but it's it gets deep, because we are a very narcissistic culture and society nowadays. And you know what? There's good and there's, you know, there is no good and there is no bad and there is no right and there is no wrong. There's ignorance and knowledge. And it's understanding that, but it's working towards better from worse.
Yeah. You know what I was really curious about? Because we touched on you going from the military to the fitness world. I was just really curious about why you actually entered the military world? Was it a family thing?
No. Or? Oh, well, actually, family thing? Yes, I wanted to be a builder.
Yeah.
So I found it in that early 90s, it was fairly hard to get an apprenticeship. And a friend of my father's was in the military. He was in engineers. And he said, well, why don't you join the army and go to engineers and get your trade as a chippy, as a builder?
Mm.
And I thought, well, you know, why not? So I joined the army, went to Kapuka. From Kapuka, some of the older guys, you know, they're the directive staff were like, there's no point being in the army unless you go to infantry. You can do any other job in the army at Civvy Street. And I was 18. I was like, okay, I'm going to infantry. So I found myself in infantry. So there goes the trade. And I was posted from infantry, sorry, the School of Infantry, posted into the unit. And then for the next, you know, 10 years... I went through the process with the commandos in the selection, and in the next 10 years I, you know, worked as a commando. But initially to join the army was to become a builder. But look, again, as I said, all of those lessons that I learned to that point in time were setting me up to be the person that I am now. Would you call it a metaphor or the like? But I'm helping people reconstruct their lives now. I'm not using a nail and hammer and a saw and all those things to actually create a building, but I'm helping people rebuild their lives.
Yeah, you are, man. And it reminds me, you said that, you know, helping you, the lessons you learned then are paving your path now. It reminds me of a conversation Tristan and I had with Paul Aquin, and he brought a fascinating question up, and he said that when I talk to people who are at a higher level than I am, the one question I always ask them, and I'm going to ask you, Steve, is there anything specifically in this most recent time of your life, maybe the year or 2 years, that you've learned that you feel enables your growth that not many people know, that maybe not the consensus has that framework of thinking, but you get it and it's allowing you to grow?
Yeah, know your craft.
Identify your strengths.
Yeah, whatever it might be. And for me, being a trainer, what does that look like? What does that entail? So, you know, there's the three components. There's the psychological component, there's the nutritional component, and there's the physiological, the exercise component. They are, but, you know, ticks in the box. They're the things that you can control, and it's helping people understand that they're the things that you can control. They're not in anyone else's power. You know, understand that you have the ability to control that. You can control what you put in your mouth. You can control, you know, the level of exercise you do, the type of exercise you do for the outcome that you're looking for. But none of that can occur if your mind's not it's not in the game. And in knowing your craft, you don't get caught up in all the fancy, you know, kind of peripheral stuff that distracts you from doing the necessary work. And that's the action. It's showing up. It's doing like that intent, but it's, again, back to, you know, my army training. A lot of people that ask the question, what is you know, what do you do on a daily level? And it's the repetition, it's the job. This is what the job requires and entails. You go out and you practice it and you practice it and you practice it to the point where it becomes, you know, second nature. It's breaking down time, doing a clean and jerk.
Yeah.
You know, what are the fundamentals to a clean and jerk? You must have, you know, a strong and sound midline. You must have mobility, you know, the flexibility, the range of movement. You must have a functioning nervous system. And you layer, you know, teach an air squat, teach a front squat with a PVC pipe, teach the pressing movements, you know, all of those components, and then you glue the exercise together. If you go straight to the complexity without having a foundation, it's flawed every time, every single time. But again, as humans, we love to distract ourselves from the craft of the nitty gritty and the foundation, and being like a bloody canary in a bird cage, and having a mirror stuck in there, and the little ladder and the little bell and all of those things. It's not out there in the fancy stuff. It's doing the necessary.
We hope you're enjoying the episode with Commando Steve Willis. Be sure to check out our other episodes, including the likes of Tim Robards, Sam Ovens, Evander Holyfield, Rich Roll, and Sean Stevenson. If you haven't yet, remember to subscribe to the Vision Board podcast via iTunes, SoundCloud, and Stitcher, and please leave us a quick 5-star review. Now back to the show. Yeah, Steve, you're inspiring people every day, man. Can we just talk a little bit about people that inspire you?
Mm.
Who are you?
Yeah, well, one guy that definitely... well, the people that inspire me, back to being back fortunate to enough...
You spoke about Arnold before
biggest,
and things
well, the
like
biggest
that,
loser, yeah. The contestants. I think having been in the military on one end of the spectrum to the other end of the spectrum, working with people on The Biggest Loser where their lives have just... They feel their lives have just fallen apart. They've lost control.
Mm.
And that challenge you in a personal and a professional level to help you know, pull them out of that rut and for them to connect with self and go, geez, the only way that things are going to change here is if I listen to the advice of others and I do the necessary work, I do the action, I learn the craft of what's required to be the person I want to be. But
yeah.
There's one guy that I started training when I first left the army and The Biggest Loser and all of those other things I was doing. He's got cerebral palsy, and I was working in a fitness first, servicing the triple packs. You know, like a lot of trainers back then. I don't know if they do that anymore. And lead generations,
yep.
And no one would service this triple pack. And the reason was because he had cerebral palsy. So the personal training coordinator said to me, "You know, do you mind doing this? You know, we're really finding it hard to get a trainer to do it." And I said, "Well, why isn't anyone doing it?" "He's got cerebral palsy. I'm out of the army. What's cerebral palsy?"
Mm.
And so I met with a guy and I said to him, "Mate, I don't know the first thing about cerebral palsy." So I think just being upfront, first and foremost, having that conversation, admitting to self and the like that you know, the shortfall there is you don't know anything about it. But when they understand you don't, I said to him, "You probably don't know the first thing about training."
Yeah.
So it's funny. I know something about training and you can teach me something about
cerebral
palsy. Yeah. And you know, we created a friendship and a relationship from there. And He couldn't even hold a broom handle in his hands. You know, his right hand was so clawed and twisted and the like, and you know, just all the issues that go along with cerebral palsy, that disconnect in the nervous system, perfectly normal functioning mind. Wow. Yeah. But because he looks different to the status quo and the norm of what it means to be human, functioning arms and legs, people automatically, you know, have a judgment around, you know, their ability, their capabilities. And you know, he was such a determined, or still to this day, a determined soul. And we started training and the like. And his vision was, "I want to be Arnold Schwarzenegger."
Yeah.
You know, he was 21 years of age. You know, he was 65 kilos ringing wet. And I think he only got up to, you know, mid-70s, if that.
That's achievement.
Yeah, and he went from not being able to hold a broom handle in his hands to bench pressing 60 kilos. He got into some powerlifting. I think his best deadlift was like 180, 140 back squat.
Good on you.
And he went from losing his job at Sydney Airport, working for a little electronics tech company, to not having work, to living with his auntie out at Blacktown, training with me at Rockdale, and then he landed a job with David Jones after a bit of heartache, and he was working at David Jones in Parramatta. So that triangle from Blacktown to Parramatta to Rockdale to train with me back home to
That's
Blacktown.
Commitment. That's a huge
commitment. All on public transport.
Yeah.
Because he can't drive. And then he did such a good job at David Jones at Parramatta that he got a promotion to Brookvale or, you know, over Manly way to the David Jones over there. So the train stops, yeah, in Sydney, and then you got to get public transport, as in a bus
all the way
over there. So living in Blacktown, working over in Brookvale, training with me in Rockdale. You know,
because I grew up in Blacktown, so I know what
the actual so he is. He was doing that, and then he helped bring the department that he'd been promoted to in in Brookvale out of the red. He got promoted to Bondi Junction, where he is to this day.
Do you still have a relationship with him?
Yeah, still good mates. And, you know, a kid with cerebral palsy who just thought his life was not going to go anywhere. Back to what you asked me before about, you know, what's the thing that a lot of people aren't doing? It's the freaking action. It's showing up. It's
that action taking, isn't it? That's huge. Me and Johnny talk about that a lot.
Being so committed to that
that's the difference.
Anything, any other distraction.
I think people spend too much time planning and not taking the action. Have you seen a lot of that stuff?
I don't want to say dreaming because I'm a dreamer, but I take action. So many people have great ideas, but never have. Maybe it's a plan of attack that holds people back. I think the origin is not asking for help. I think a lot of people may live in that headspace of being an expert or guru, not realizing that we should all be coaches, as coaches always have the framework of learning. And it's an interesting question, but the action, you see it all around guys you help, guys I help, people you help.
I don't know if you've read the book Resilience by Eric Greitens.
No, but I'm writing it down right now.
Resilience by Eric Greitens. He's now, I believe, the governor of Missouri. Only just got named at the last elections. Mm, but yeah. he, when he was younger, so he was a Rhodes Scholar, so he went to Rhodes. He worked as a humanitarian in his late teens, into his 20s, and then he dreamt up and had this epiphany of, I'm going to become a Navy SEAL. So he was a Navy SEAL as well and was an officer and deployed overseas as a Navy SEAL for a period of time. And then he moved on and left the forces. But some of his mates, and one in particular, had conversed with him and written a letter when he'd left the forces and his life was falling apart and he's looking for the answers at the bottom of a bottle.
Hmm.
And essentially the book is those letters back and forth, and it's around, you know, having more resilience in your life and what that looks like, and the elements that go into place to being a more resilient human being. And one thing that I took away particularly from that is we're very much a culture and a society worldwide that's caught up in our emotions and feelings, and we act out of our emotions and feelings. There's the word act.
Mm.
You know, we act enough on any one particular thing, we reinforce habit. Habit is character. Character is our identity. So we've gone emotions, actions, identity. You know, look at a lot of people where their lives have fallen apart and they're scratching their head going, how did I get here? They're in such a place of emotions and feelings constantly that they're acting out of that. And a lot of time, look, the food, it's so readily available now. We're using that as a means to distract self from self, you know, or alcohol or whatever, drugs and all that, because there's something that's, you know, going on within us that we're agitated about, but we're unwilling to do the work to rectify it. And he says, all we need to do is invert that, you know, identity. Who do you want to be? If you don't know, have a mentor. Look up the people that are doing great things and emulate their actions. And over time, through that emulation of action, you find your own path in your own way, and you create that identity. But you only give enough time and space and concern to emotions and feelings.
Yeah.
And you know, emotions and feelings are important, and to be able to deal with them carefully and understand them and be able to articulate them. It's much like using your phone with boxing gloves on. A lot of us, you know, we've got boxing gloves on trying to deal with our emotions and feelings. We can't, we don't quite understand, you know, what they are, and we haven't created that mindfulness and tuned into them. And recognizing when you are being emotional, we all do. Like I know if I've been in front of a lot of people and I'm tired and I'm worn out, you want to eat something that's just, it's comfortable. Yeah, it just helps to distract you from you, or plonk on the lounge chair and switch on the TV and forget about your reality and live vicariously someone else's reality. And that's the challenge. It's going, hang on a second, I'm trying to distract myself from myself. What is it that I could do instead of that? Even down to it being minute, like breathing, like meditating. That's challenging.
So
that requires action.
I'm glad we talked about this, because it wasn't too long ago. Tristan and I talk about this on the show a lot. But I can remember a time in my life not too long ago where my path was way, probably total polar opposite than right at this moment speaking to you. It wasn't that long ago. I was living in L.A., and what worked for me, something as simple, is I knew like I needed to subtract ideas and bad friends and habits out of my life, but I also needed to create momentum in a positive way. I hadn't worked out. And with me, it was started with, I made one non-negotiable, and that was, I'm not leaving my bedroom without making the bed. And I tell people that. I was like, if I could just make the bed, and no matter how bad my day was, I'd come home. I'm a visual learner, a little bit auditory as well. I'd see the bed was made. It would have a carryover effect. So for you, because we talked about taking action, that's the most difficult part for some people. But once they get started, another difficult level to that is accountability, to keep on that path, to keep motivated. When you would have your one-on-one clients and on TV, maybe something that would there be something that you would, a tool you would use with them to like hold them accountable, or somebody listening at home and maybe wants to just give up the, you know, lifestyle and fitness change who's struggling, what would you tell that person to keep going?
I guess as a trainer, people pay you good money to be that person who holds them accountable or responsible for whatever it is that they're trying to achieve. And it's recognizing within self that you can hold yourself accountable. You can and hold yourself responsible. That in itself is empowering. That's where that self-belief, self-worth, and self-confidence comes from, is from going, I have a choice at this point or this moment in time. You know, what is it that I'm going to do? Am I going to just, you know, let it all fall apart, or am I going to take control, get out of bed in the morning, make your bed? You know, the simple things creates that snowball effect, which, you know, either pushes you into a positive feedback loop or a negative feedback loop. And I say exactly the same thing to my daughter, who's challenged with her identity at this point in time. She's finished school. She's finished having to show up at 8:30 in the morning, finish at 3 o'clock, the framework of what it looks like to be a student, to be accountable to that structure and the like. It's not there anymore. She has all this time, which almost seems so overwhelming, which puts her in, you know, slightly depressed state because she hasn't had to deal with that before. And it's not as difficult and complex as we're told to believe. It's like, oh,
it doesn't sound, I'm feeling
this way. Why am I feeling all this? Just think about it for a second. You're no longer that student at school. All this process and procedure and accountability to what it means to be a student from, what, 6 years, 5, 6 years of age to 17 or 18. That's a long time reinforcing certain habits. You're now, there's a transition happening. There's a, you're on a different path. What are you going to do about it? I say exactly the same thing to her. Babe, when you get out of bed in the morning, that's something that you have control of. Tick that box. Make your bed. You live in an apartment building where there's a gym in the building. Go downstairs and do a 20-minute workout. That's something that you can control. You keep working all those little things that you can control. You reinforce that, those behaviors. And before you know it, you're doing things that you never expected or believed that you'd be able to do. It's all in the habit. Like, I can't eat well. I can't do this. I can't do that. Yes, you can. It's just that what you're struggling with is breaking the habits of old. You're living under the shadow or the rock of your past. And a lot of the time, it's what we've been taught from when we were younger, either by our parents, our teachers. But like, is it working for you? If it's not, have a think about it. Address it, be mindful around it, and do the necessary work and put those actions in place, no matter how small. Oh, but I don't know this. You don't have to know. Yeah. You know, we're all humans, back to what is our nature. We have the ability to take what is in our thoughts and turn it into something tangible. If we leave it in our heads, knocking about, it's like the boogeyman.
Yeah.
You know, with the kids, oh, the boogeyman, I'm going to hide under my sheet. You know, we do that as adults. You know, how mature are we?
Yeah. Does this behavior still suit me? Yeah. You have to ask yourself that.
I always get a bit frustrated sometimes when I talk, because it is that simple.
Mm. Yeah.
And a lot of people go, oh, but it's not that simple. They might be saying, it's not, it can't be this, it can't be that. Hey, nothing ever fell in my lap. Nothing's ever fallen in my lap. I've had to work my backside off. Definitely. I got taught in the army how to dig trenches and dig holes. And I guarantee if I took a handful of people into the bush with picks and shovels and we spent a week digging holes, they'd learn more about themselves doing that than sitting at their desks, tapping away at a computer, looking at Facebook.
Please create that product, because that would be amazing. You invite
me. It's you already got that product.
Well, we're doing it with the camps.
Coming of age for young men. Like, that's what I've read. There's this article about society and holes in our game is societal growth, is that 100, 200, 300 years ago, maybe longer, boys had a
rite of passage.
A rite of passage, sort of thing. All right, when you told that, use that as an example, I could just see, like, you leading this whole pack into the wilderness. All right, get home safely.
But we find ourselves in a very... how do you say it? Funny place in history with technology and what that looks like, and it's very multi-layered, and there's a whole lot going on that distracts us from who we are, essentially. Yeah. Like,
do you find it hard to relax? Sometimes I find it really hard to relax.
No, I used to, but I don't anymore. Like,
do you do just, any meditation?
Yeah,
or float?
Yeah, I meditate.
Do you ever get in the tank?
Yeah.
Where do you float at?
Oh, gosh, wherever I am.
Okay.
But there's, oh, so Sydney-based, that where I was training at a mate's gym over Five Dock Way, there's some tanks there.
Yeah.
There's stuff in around the city. There's more and more popping
up. How do you find it? Because I struggle.
I've taken them twice.
I struggle. Like, I get floating. A lot. Yeah, I get
anxiety sensory deprivation.
From it.
Why?
I just feel, I don't mind being closed in. It's just, I don't love too many thoughts running through my mind.
See, so you're trying to what?
Hide from
it. Keep going.
Yeah, so I struggle with the fact that I've gone, because I love being creative, but I think it makes me to a point where I've got 20 different things running through my mind and I just can't control it. And I love being in control.
But see, that's the reason why you need to do it more. Anything that we resist is going to persist. And what you're going to do by not actually being able to allow that empty and allow that stuff, you to pass through that, you're creating more and more resistance. It's going to keep persisting and persisting and persisting. It's like the knock on the door. So meditation, in my layman terms, is your ability to sit, or float tank is another way that you can meditate, and put yourself in a space where what it is that you anchor to is your breath. That is your anchor. Any thoughts and the like that you have, fine, allow them to come. But it's your ability to connect and recognize that you're thinking about something and just bring yourself back to your breath.
Yeah.
And you find the practice and the habit comes, and over time you can focus more on just your breath and just being, and those thoughts don't come as much, because what you're doing is essentially cataloging them, and they're in their place that they need to be, and you become more creative. That cup, and let's call it cup for those
water bottle or something.
A water bottle.
Yeah.
We look at it and we see its form. It's made of plastic and everything. But what is it actually? What's its nature? What's it created for?
Yeah, for me to drink.
It's a vessel.
Yeah.
Because what's the most important thing about that is its emptiness.
Mm. So it can be filled.
It can be filled, but when it's full, can you put anything else in it?
No.
Yeah, there's your mind.
Yeah.
And you like Steve dropping bombs.
Yeah. No, but that's right. Exactly right. So many of us are so overwhelmed and we're full to the brim. Of course, there's no way of creating something new or...
It limits creativity. You need to shuffle that out. There's an awesome website, guys. Go to resetme.com and just go to it. I won't get into it now. But it's just ideas and practical ways to refresh the mind and focus on your breathing. Like Steve said, another awesome book I always talk about is by Eckhart Tolle, The Power of Now. And it's an easy read, and it's all about staying in the moment, the past, the present, illusion. All that matters is right now in each breath.
Yeah, and if you can't be happy or content, content's probably a better word than happy, because we're throwing happy around like it's... Wish I got a gold coin for every time I heard the word. But content in yourself, in where you are in life right now, in this moment in time, you'll never be unless you create that mindfulness around it. And, a lot of people use the word enlightenment. And enlightenment is just coming across new understanding of things or perspective, or you're coming out of ignorance. But what doesn't change, and I think is that a Taoist saying, is before enlightenment, chop wood, carry water. After enlightenment, chop wood, carry water. We are human.
Mm.
We are here to toil. No one escapes life without pain, suffering, and fear. And that's an Eric Greitens thing. And you've got to understand, be honest with yourself and recognize that our lot in life is we are born and we will leave this earth at whatever point in time. What are you doing with it in between is ultimately up to you, and that's going to come with a whole lot of those gritty moments. But I even enjoy them. Like, I never grew up with there was never alcohol in my house.
Yeah.
With my parents growing up in the army, there was alcohol. For the past few years, I will not touch alcohol. I will not take anything or do anything that takes me as or helps me to escape or to alters numb, your
consciousness.
My, alters my consciousness, my reality. I want to be so immersed in everything that I do and have that consciousness around, because what I can then do is reflect on it in that mindfulness, and there's gratitude, there's humility, and there's all of those other things that, you know, we're talking more and more about nowadays, because we are all interconnected.
Yeah.
The Dalai Lama says there is no such thing as I. Nothing exists of itself. Nothing is independent. But you'll look at a table or a chair or, you know, something and go, yeah, but that chair, it's there in the room. But what you see is, yes, but it's a sum of its parts. Yeah. It's like the clean and jerk. It's a sum of its parts. If you falter in any way in that lift, you can break it down to, yeah, we need to work on his front squat.
Yeah.
That will bring up his clean and jerk. Or he's tight through his lats and his terrace. You know, he doesn't have good shoulder mobility, so he's limited in jerking that load overhead.
Yeah.
Let's work on some mobility, free him up, get him in to see the massage therapist, get some dry needling, whatever. You know, like, and that's back to the craft. And when we recognize that everything is the sum of its parts, we as humans, we cannot operate and live independently. We all need each other to collaborate, and we're all interconnected. Yeah. We are a microcosm of the macrocosm of the bigger picture. It's back to nutrition. Now, oh, what should I eat? What supplements should I take? Man, if you find whatever is found in nature, whole foods, you can grow in the earth and the like, eat that before you eat anything that comes out of a packet.
If you have to read it, don't eat it. Like, in America, I only got into this industry when I moved to Australia 3 years ago. Mm. But it seems like it was yesterday that I'm in second grade in America, and we're having people, experts, quote unquote, come in and teach us about nutrition. And they're teaching us, and they're teaching kids to read the nutritional labels. And I was thinking to myself, hold on, that's wrong. Why are we educating people on to read the labels when we should just literally say, if it has labels, don't eat it? We shouldn't have to read the labels. Real food, whole foods, they don't have labels. I know that's a little bit one-sided and probably a little bit militant, but that's the way it simplifies things for me, at least. It works for me. I know it's not going
to
work for everyone.
It brings it back to the simple and a foundation of, you know, what does it mean to be human? And if we look at the necessities, we need air. We're gone within minutes without the ability to breathe. And, you know, second is fluids. We're gone within days without, you know, having water. And then people go, third is food. But no, food isn't third. We can go for weeks without food.
Yeah.
We need sleep. And to be able to sleep, we need some form of shelter to protect us from the elements. And then comes the food. You know, we're so strung up on our food and constantly nourishing our bodies. Yeah. And yeah, that's important. We live in a plentiful, the developed countries, we live with plenty. You know, we have the old first world problems. And that's where it comes back to me between, am I working with authentic self here or my ego?
Mm.
You know, there's a lot of what I'm plugging into my body, you know, helping me to achieve things because I'm trying to appease an ego, or am I working towards just being a better human being?
Yeah.
And I'm not saying that there is anything wrong with ego, but being mindful of that. It's like I started a responsibility project.
So I was going to ask you about it.
That's a contribution back to society without an expectation of anything in return. Now, to say an expectation without an expectation of anything in return is a damn big statement, because of this business.
Most people always expect
it's something. It's always an expectation,
And
just
game.
Being human, that's exactly right. We don't afford our time and the like without, you know, expecting something in return. But even just being mindful around your expectation and the reasons why you do things helps to clear your path. It just, because you think about it and you think, I'm going to do this, I'm not going to do that. Because it's, you know, it helps you look to the bigger picture. And then act in the moment rather than, you know, getting a certain way down, and then that expectation isn't met. But that expectation, that's your expectation. You know, no, I say to my daughter, oh, Dad, can I have some pocket money? No, babe, you're part of this family. Your job as a part of this family is to make your bed and, you know, do the things that need to be done. Otherwise, all those fun things that you want to do, we're not going to be able to do as much because Mum and Dad are going to be making the bed and picking up after you.
Yeah.
There you go.
And then she goes, oh, yeah. And then I said, so when Mum and Dad recognize that you're doing those things, and then one day we reward you with something like, because you're not expecting it, boom, it's you're even more grateful for it.
And it feels good.
But then when the if there's an expectation and we don't meet that expectation, what are the emotions that come?
Yeah.
Anger, frustration, you know, all of those other things, they're yours. They're not anybody. No one else has created them in you other than yourself.
Yeah.
And then people go, oh, yeah. And she's eight and she gets it.
Wow.
That's awesome. You're talking about it.
She's killing it.
And that's one of the, I know we've probably run out of time, but some of the other stuff that I've been doing and everything that we've spoken about, if one human being has the capacity and ability to do something, meditate, that means all human beings can. It doesn't make any one of us any better or any worse than any other. It's just what you're willing to do or not to do.
Yeah.
And, you know, meditate, be enlightened, be mindful, you know, whatever it is. We all have that capacity because we are all human.
Yeah. All right, Steve, just to finish up, we've got some fan questions. So I've just got a couple, two or three that I know that people really want to know. One of them that really came up, they just wanted to kind of just get an insight into kind of the training that you're doing now and how you fit it into your daily sort of life.
I again, training for me has been around since I was quite young. So to not train feels quite foreign and odd.
Yeah.
And a lot of what I do is very kind of, is very CrossFit orientated in that sense. You know, the functional movements, the squats, the deadlifts, the pull-ups, the pressing, you know, the Olympic movements. I really enjoy that type of stuff. And the cardio. The older I've gotten, the more I've identified how important your aerobic and anaerobic base is at a foundational level. And it's just good at warming you up and preparing you for exercise as well. So, you know, on any given day, like, I've got a couple of assault bikes in my garage or a Concept 2. You know, I'll always do a 10 to 20 minute warm up on one of them.
Yep.
And I afford myself that time because what else would I be doing? Like, that's, I'm leading by example because I train people and I help people improve their lives. I can't just tell them what to do and not do it myself. And I'll get down into my garage or I'll drag the assault bike up into the house, you know, if Axel's asleep and no one else is home, and I'll do a half an hour to an hour session. I'll get on the assault bike. I'll do that. I'll do that CrossFit style or circuit style, you know, workouts where there'll be some running with some pull-ups and an Olympic movement, or and I'll just chip away, you know, consistently just work, you know, different circuits, different days, you know, time domains. I'll bring it in and out, add more intensity, work in shorter time domains, have a rest. But I my sessions tend to go anywhere between an hour to an hour and a half, and that's with a sound warm up and a good cool down, you know, stretch. I'm huge on mobility, functionality, range of movement.
Yeah,
I think something like, you know, along with meditation, yoga, and the like is important.
You smashed it at the CrossFit Games, didn't you? Was it fourth place?
Yeah, a few years ago. Yeah,
wow.
Yeah, and I'd love to compete again. I want to go back. I'll be masters, but I went to compete this year, so 2016. Excuse me, but Axel was born in December. A few days later, whilst I was training, I knocked myself out. So I passed out. I cleaned the bar. We went to do a front squat, and I just passed out, hit my head.
Oh wow!
I was pretty messed up for a while, and then again, I travel a lot, and I was up in Queensland, and I took the next day off after doing some work up there, and I went out of my brother's boat and we went wakeboarding and stuff, and I tore the medial ligament in my knee.
Jesus, mate.
So again, but this is back, this is life saying to me, how bad do you want it, buddy?
Exactly. Right.
It's the universe saying, all right, you've made a conscious decision that you want to do this, but you've got all this other stuff on your plate.
Yeah.
And you say before, can you wind down? Can you rest and all those types of things? And I've been a very hyperactive person, but I see it like it might, whether it's right or wrong, it's the universe saying, all right, you want to compete in the CrossFit Games again, but you've got all of these priorities, you know, get real, buddy. But if you want to do it, you're going to have to reorganize those priorities. So I knock myself out. It has me asking questions to myself. I tear the medial ligament in my knee. It has me, it's inhibiting my ability to perform. But if I want to perform, I've got to push a number of priorities aside to be that athlete. We've got to be real with ourselves. Yeah. A lot of the time we're just, like you're saying, we're dreamers, and it only ever stays a dream.
That mindset is really interesting, because our last guest was Tim Robards, who was the Bachelor.
Yeah.
And at the start of the year, he tore his bicep.
Yes.
And he was going through the process of his rehab, and the first day he had it was like, well, what's going to happen? Like, do I give up here, or do I come back?
Yeah.
How quickly can I come back? And he took the path of how quickly can I come back? And his rehab was slashed in half. Done. It was all mindset.
We're doing the work.
Yeah. So it's interesting that you brought that up as well.
Yeah, and that's what, you know, the training, the competition, you know, all of that type of stuff. You know, even when I competed back in 2009, after that, I was spent. And I just did a write-up or an interview a few weeks ago with a journalist from The Australian. It was in the paper the other day. And back to my younger years and all that, I felt quite compelled to try and prove myself, because I didn't get that nurturing or like as a young guy. Yeah. So I felt that there was something missing. I wasn't capable or as good as or whatever it might have been. So I pushed myself hard to seek that validation.
Yeah.
Did you feel like you were undeserved?
So that's, but I, you know, and a lot of people go, I use that as fuel to motivate me and to drive me to feel, to fit in with the status quo and the like. But I recognize after the CrossFit Games that is just you're just undoing yourself. Like to constantly work so hard to feel compelled to validate and confirm your identity in society, you'll burn out.
Yeah, I've seen sure too.
Yeah, that's right. And you need to do it. It's got to come from a more genuine place. And when it's a genuine place, that motivation's intrinsic, and it's always there. Yeah, we get tired and we get down and out. That's part of being human. But that's why I have the ability to get in my garage and train at night, train in a hotel room, do it because I enjoy it. As sick and twisted as it might be doing Tabata sets naked in your hotel floor. it's liberating.
I hear you, man.
Do you and Michelle ever go head-to-head in the gym?
I wouldn't say head-to-head, but we definitely train and we do push each other. I think it's much like training with mates. There's always that unspoken competition.
Yeah.
And that just helps you to better yourself, because at the end of the day, it doesn't matter. But what it does elicit is it helps you to, you know, take it to the next gear or step it up a level.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And it's healthy, you know, because she's a female. She's much lighter than me in the cardio sense. You know, if it's running, like, she'll kick my ass every day.
Yeah.
But you know, when it comes to lifting and the like, I've got her in that domain. You combine it together into, you know, again, like a circuit type training, and it's all relative to body weight and the like. You know, that it's on.
Yeah.
And it could be like rounds for time and all of that. And, you know, you're hurting and you're seeing someone else, you know, pumping out a few. It's just like there's a bit of that anxiety. It's like, oh shit, I've got to keep going. And you do.
There's a special episode just the right
I'm
there.
Already thinking. I like thinking out of the box. I'll say it off record because I don't want to give an idea. But like off the record, a couple of young bucks I'm helping. I run like consulting for first year coaches getting in the game. And we were talking about, man, it'd be cool if one day in the fitness industry there'd be a governing body that would be able to, like,
consistency
with ensuring that coaches out there have either enough skill set, the right intent to be able to help people. And I was like, could you imagine a reality show if, like, you and Michelle had that platform, brought on these young, no, not you, yep, you guys are, that sort of thing, and just recorded and documented.
Yeah, like, it's definitely something I've been thinking about lately, and again, with my camps.
I don't know if there's a governing body, though.
Well, there's Fitness Australia, which is kind of...
It's just a rego, really, situation, isn't it?
And I think they're working on bringing themselves up to speed and incorporating a lot of the different varieties of training that are now possible.
I think there's a big gap between people can coach but they don't have knowledge, and people have knowledge but they can't coach. So there's no happy medium in that sense, where you've got, you know, we were speaking yesterday about people being rushed into the industry too quickly, or the, you know, the barrier to entry is quite small now. So I think that's what Johnny's trying to say.
But it's a battle of attrition there too, and you get a lot of the younger ones, they end up in, they get their, they tick in the box, they cert through the cert for the diploma or whatever it might be.
Yeah.
And then they're in the industry and they've been taught the ropes and to a degree. But the one thing you can't, that takes skill is the ability to take your craft and be relatable.
Yeah.
And understand other human beings and build a rapport. And
that, emotional that intelligence is
emotional
huge.
Intelligence, and it requires, you know, compassion and empathy. Yeah. And I think the industry is growing exponentially. And I believe the reason for that is because it's innate in us as human beings to help one another.
Oh, absolutely.
And because there's been such a disconnect and we've become so fragmented because of business, you know, kind of ending up, the lines have been blurred between what having your own personal time and space and being human and enjoying that and working.
Yeah.
And it's, mm-hmm. It's one and the same thing nowadays. And I think people have connected with that. You know, how many people have you ever met that have worked a corporate job and it's the grind.
Yeah.
And then they start training and they have this life change. So like, freaking giving that job up because...
And they become a trainer.
I did it.
Become a trainer.
He was a stockbroker.
For 12 years, yeah.
That's exactly what I'm saying.
Yeah.
And it you resonate. You'd rather... You get more fulfillment out of being the best human that you can possibly be and taking that newfound knowledge and understanding and helping others than working a job, getting a decent pay packet and buying a car or a watch or having this house. Like, that's
yeah.
just stuff.
Possessions. Yeah.
We're very much that society.
Yes, it is, man. If you're out there and you attach happiness to an object, you're never going to be happy or fulfilled because somebody else will always have more. And it's very important to... understand the intent, especially if your coach is out there, of why you're in the industry.
Mm.
I think it's very important.
Yeah.
Why, you know, to help people, to give back, to assist in somebody's growth and evolution. And I think that's where our fitness, if we would be able to strip all the other stuff down to its simplicity, I think that's what the industry brings. And, you know, having you on the show and share your insight and see what level you've been able to take that passion you have to is awesome, man. You know, I really appreciate you being here with us.
No worries. Thanks.
Just want to hear me with a personality question.
Yeah, and Steve, last question that we ask all of our guests. Steve is having a private dinner party. You get to invite 5 guests. They could be dead or alive, but there's one rule. They can't be any family or friends. Who are the 5 people Commando Steve is inviting to dinner?
Gosh, definitely Arnie. Nice.
There he is.
Bruce Lee, Muhammad Ali, and Martin Luther. Mother Teresa. There you go.
My man,
I was about to say there's gonna be 5 alpha males. Lucky at Mother Teresa
should be there to
I could have been going, out. You know, Dalai Lama, could have been Mandela.
You're a man who knows what you want.
Margaret Thatcher, she interested me. That she was
actually one question I didn't get to ask you because we spoke a lot about books and you seem very, very open to learning.
Yeah, I love reading.
Can you just share maybe 3 or 4 books that maybe you've just finished? Or
also that Resilience by Eric Greitens.
Yep.
The Consolations of Philosophy. De Botton. Alain de Botton, he wrote that.
Yep.
The Theatre of War.
Who's that by? The Theatre of War?
Yeah, Dorries. We'll look it up. Yep. I've just read, finishing off... Letters to a Stoic, so Seneca, Epictetus, the Enchiridion. Yeah.
How much reading do you do per day? Is this something you're kind of non-negotiable sort of thing?
Yeah, no, like I don't read every day, but it's like anything, you know, you get yourself in a bit of a groove and it's just, and especially if something is you know, you're really interested in something. It's
philosophy.
Quite hard to put it down. But I love philosophy. Yeah. I love the Buddhism, the Zen, the Taoist stuff. I love Stoicism. You know, again, Seneca, Epictetus, and the like. It's Socrates, you know, Cato, Marcus Aurelius, all that stuff.
Wow. Write those down, guys, for sure.
And before we let you leave, what's the best way for people to connect with you on social media and also maybe your training programs online?
Yeah, so social media, all the handles are Commando Steve and the Commando Steve website, so commandosteve.com. And then there's the online program, which is getcommandofit.com.au.
Awesome. Well, Steve, we really appreciate your time. It's been awesome. Great chat. And yeah, man, really it's one of my favorite ones, man.
Thanks,
so,
man. Thanks for coming to us and spending some time with us, man.
We might have to get a part two. Yes. Get Michelle in here
we
as well.
We love sequels.
Thanks, Steve.
No worries. Take care.
So the Vision Board podcast just had a visionary on there, man. Can you imagine being a little child and imagining standing in front of a cloud? Like, I know you speak about this quite a bit, actually, that vision and kind of creating your own path. But, you know, wow, that's just kind of when us three of us were just sitting around and just looking at each other and just, whoa, and go, well, this guy is on a path and he knows exactly what he wants.
One man, of course, and we talked to him off the record before it started. We spent some time with him after he left. And all that stuff, you know, that we were talking about that he's all about, it's really evident that that's who he is. And how, man, there were moments in that interview just now, I was just super inspired. I don't know if I don't want to say I wasn't expecting that. I guess I didn't know what to expect, but his energy was infectious and his idea, like philosophical, like interests and, you know, what he said, he's just curiosity is huge for him. And It was awesome to sit and share this space with him because I'm feeling super inspired right now.
Oh, I couldn't have said it any better, man. Like, I think it just radiates. Like, sometimes, you know, we have spoken about surrounding yourself with good people, and I think he's a perfect example of people that you want to not only aspire to, but, you know, gain. Well, I'm just going to use the same word. You know, you gain inspiration from someone, even from today. I think both of us were pretty fired up when it was all finished. But, you know, we're recording this literally an hour after we've done it because we both had clients on, but it was one of those things that, you know, the ideas just came running. He actually, when I was talking to you about, you know, the float tank and, you know, for my own struggles, you know, he's now given me a bit of motivation to maybe jump back in there.
And sometimes that's all it takes, guys, is to get a second party advice. Sometimes if you have a relationship or your comfort level is to an extent with a certain person, and maybe you're not open to learn from them, whether it's a family member, a partner. And that's why, you know, when you go out and some people say if you have to talk to a professional, I think that's a big step in in thinking differently. And sitting across from Steve and watching you guys chat about that and watching his face when you said you like being creative and then, you know, wanting to work on ideas to assist in that creativity such as the tank, I could tell you were listening to him. And then, you know, on paper, you know, the commando, military, special forces, PT, celebrity coach, I was not expecting his awareness. I don't know what I was expecting. You know, we've interviewed a lot of coaches. Commando Steve reminded me a mix of, like, Ferrugia and DeFranco.
Yeah.
My bad. Ferrugia and Elliot Hulse.
Yeah, Elliot.
Like, Joe D. So. Yeah, there's a lot of Joe D. in his delivery.
Yeah, I think.
But his Steve's presence is what, you know, you meet people and they're on this path. You and I, after we do these interviews, sometimes we're like, yeah, I get it. And sometimes it's, you know, sometimes people need the lights to be on for them to shine.
Yeah. I think that just open to learning bit just really just read it, you know, it really just blew me away how much he was open to learning and sharing what he's learned with everyone else. And I think that's a big part of who he is. And it was good to experience that firsthand. Like, I think hopefully we can do as many in-person interviews as we can. Like, I know that we love doing Skypes and we're trying to maybe come to a different strategy about how we can get more people in person. But I love that episode, man. It was a lot of fun and it was someone that we truly connected with. So we thank Steve a lot.
I agree. Yeah. Guys, listening, Steve came to us. Steve met us at our health club and very inspirational. Also, I keep using that word because before he got casted to be on the show, he was wearing the same exact uniform you and I were wearing. He was fitness first personal trainer, paying rent, paying his dues. And, you know, I like what he said. His headspace, where he is today, it was a accumulation of that path. It wasn't on accident. And he was very adamant about that. When he was talking about his intent in overcoming adversity, you saw the passion and the motivation coming out of him.
Yeah.
And
well, he's living life, isn't he? Like,
he seems very culminated.
He did the best he could while he was in the army. He spoke a lot about his childhood. He was very open about his children too, which I do really respect.
Yeah, some
people,
Axel,
especially when you're in the kind of spotlight, a lot of people guard their children away. But I think it was, you know, it was very genuine the fact that he was open to the fact that you know, the way he deals with his children, what he's trying to teach them. And, you know, I think for him, he doesn't regard himself as a celebrity. He just regards himself as a human being, and he's willing to share that with everyone else.
Man, so much sharing, like you just said, that and how much knowledge he has to give away. Guys, after we wrap this up, we continue to have this chat off the record, and he was telling us, you know, he pulls his phone out and he was bringing up this PDF audiobook about...
What's it called again?
Was it the Constellations of Philosophy? No, Letters to a Stoic. And it was a segment from Epictetus.
That was quite an interesting book.
And it was about life and death.
2,000 years ago, yeah.
2,000 years ago. So he's reading this out loud. He has his phone out, his mobile tablet. He's reading a segment. Tristan and I are standing over his shoulder, and it was just a cool, like, campfire moment. Mm. And you turn to him as he's reading, you go, when was this written? And when he said 25, I thought he was going to say 25 years ago. 2,500 years ago.
That's crazy.
And that willingness to learn and to always know that, you know, you are the coach. You're not the expert. The coach always has room for growth. The expert knows everything.
Mm.
It's something I've been really fascinated with lately, or identifying characteristics in, like, the expert versus the coach. And in our industry, so many people with the advancement in social media want to attach the name expert to their name.
Yeah.
And I feel that that's probably the last thing you want to do.
Well, it's an interesting thing that, you know, you'd think that maybe his long-term future would still be fitness and health, but I don't think it is.
I actually really think
the keynote speaking and him getting on a wider stage and getting to a huge audience to actually let, you know, how we were speaking, actually not a huge audience, a more intimate audience where, just for example, he might have 10 people in this room surrounding this table, and everyone, I think he respected the fact that he had a bit of open dialogue and he was able to kind of converse with us instead of him giving a speech in front of everyone and not having anyone return anything. So I think that I reckon that could be a huge thing for him, giving those kind of intimate sort of really, you know,
meaningful sort of little deliveries.
Yeah.
I think also is a good point about, it's what I always try to get through with younger PTs, is the fact that if you could take away, if you could compartmentalize the titles, if you could take away PT or take away coach or celebrity coach, whatever that may be, and just identify the intent of what all coaches are here to do, and that's help people. So I agree that he might not be doing coaching forever, and even if he goes into another role strictly, you know, solely speaking, I still think the intent has been the exact same and has been since he started this, and that's helping people.
Yeah, and I think that kind of in-person interaction, like, I think that's where we kind of
go
wrong.
He said that too.
Yeah, he did. And
about how he doesn't like the videos.
Yeah, with the whole online game and how everything's kind of going to technology. Like, I agree with him. Like,
me too, man.
I really enjoy that sort of person in people interaction. So I think that's a skill that will never get taken over, I feel.
Yeah, and it's very honest. There's nowhere to run, and it's for a guy like him, and we're evolving to. It really puts you in your power place. It puts you in this moment that you pretty much ask for. So you get to perform and you get to showcase and highlight to the 10 people, like you said, in the rhetorical scenario with Steve, or just me, you, and him in the same room. And there's a comfort, there's a genuine nature to that. We're not hiding behind a camera lens. We don't have time to edit. There's no pause button. So whatever we have feeling, it's like an impulsive, conscious learning moment.
Mm.
And it doesn't happen very often anymore, does it? Because everyone, especially with the, you know, with trying to brand ourselves and promote ourselves, and social media is good for that because a lot of it's free and you get a bigger reach.
Yeah.
But what gets lost in that is, you know, is this person genuine? Would I invest my child's livelihood in them or my livelihood in them? I guess when you have somebody in person, you can pretty much get the gist.
Is that genuine, I think, feeling, I guess? You just, when you're in person, you can just kind of tell whether someone's genuine or not. So
he was saying that about his little one, Axel. Mm. He said he's such a good character.
Now I think about it, when he was, like, I didn't really get into much when he was speaking about the father-son connection.
And now I kind of just thought about what he was talking about.
And then I try to relate it back to myself. And when I'm growing up, even now, it's like I have a lot more conversations with my mother, but I kind of do more with my father without having to speak.
Well, he was talking about what he meant, why he brought his father up, because his father left him.
Yeah.
And
that's what I mean. He didn't have a father figure. But for me, I played soccer because dad played soccer. I would go follow my dad to training because he did it. I would just continually follow him without actually having to ask him, if you get what I mean. But with my mum, it would always be a conversation, and then we would go. I'm not sure if I'm kind of relating this properly, but I'm just, that's the angle that I was kind of seeing it from.
Yeah, he brought the father up because he felt that everything he was competing at, whether it was the military, CrossFit, was never good enough because he had this void in his life, because at that young age his father left him. And then he said there was a moment where he just took his body to like the complete exhaustion, where he realized that, you know, this isn't about proving anything to anybody. He kept using the word inner ego, or but he kept it like an intrinsic belief of who we are. It's already within us. There's nothing that we're going to find outside. There's nothing that we're going to accomplish through action. There's nothing that we're going to buy that's going to help make the best version of ourselves. The best version of ourselves is already within us. And that's where he felt like, you know, having that detachment from the father, it took him years to realize that.
But it's great that he's got a good relationship with both his boys. So.
Oh, man, it's great that you're right. Like, to be that open and share with, you know, the how he is as a father.
Yeah.
And I think that's the most noticeable thing. He, like, culminated, man. He seems genuinely at peace with who he is.
Yeah, I agree,
and that's why, like, he left me feeling super inspired.
Definitely. We're going to jump out. So, guys, we've got some huge episodes coming. Like, we're really grateful for Steve coming on. I think we're going to follow this up with some very similar individuals. Like, we've got Lewis House on. If you don't know who Lewis House is,
School of Greatness.
School of Greatness.
Go right now. Go there.
Johnny loves him.
I love him, man.
Boy.
He's no Ohio boy, man. It's a Buckeye.
He's my favorite podcaster by a mile. And he has got a really genuine story, ups and downs. And I think he's going to bring some really great things to our show.
See why Lewis suits. Like, he's the guy that I've been wanting to get on. Where you and I, why we work really well together, because in scenarios like this, I'm the dreamer and you're the realist. And after six episodes last year, I thought we were like at a level to get Lewis on. And Tristan would be like, dude, we're not at a level to get, like, what are you talking about? Just wait, just be patient. And then I would like always have it on my checklist, 30 episodes. You think we're, and now finally after a year, we're going to get to talk to Lewis. And you're right. Like, I look at some of the older episodes and it's like the, damn, we weren't ready for that guy. I wish we could talk to him now, sort of thing. I'm glad we got Lewis now and not 6 months ago.
I think we're ready for him now.
For sure.
Next, we've got Diamond Dallas Page.
DDP. Awesome.
One of my favorite wrestlers growing up.
He's doing great things
in fitness and health. He's got his DDP yoga. He's been through the ups and downs with plenty of people, especially Jake Roberts.
He's saving people's lives.
Yeah, he's got a great story, and I think people are going to really appreciate this one.
Yeah, and we got so many in the pipeline.
And then next week, we won't go too far into who we're going. We've got Stephanie Rice. Stephanie, three Olympic gold medals. She's got five world records. She's a swimmer, and she's from Australia. Yeah, she's quite interesting. We actually shared the same housemate. When she lived in LA, she lived with the same person who I lived with in Sydney.
Did you know this?
I knew this at the end of last year.
Does she know this?
No, I don't think she does.
Oh, what a cool story to share on air,
and this
dude.
This was only last year.
That's so crazy. What a cool story.
Very interesting.
I can't wait to see how that interview goes.
Yeah.
So. And how long ago has it been since she competed in the Olympics?
2014.
Oh, wow. That's very recent.
Yeah. So I think she's still trying to find her way in life. So I think she's gone down the entrepreneurial business path. So be great to hear what she's doing.
From an Olympian.
You know, all that kind of, I'm sure we'll backtrack and try to get a bit of insights into how she used to prepare for the Olympics and all that sort of stuff. So,
have we had an Olympic gold medalist?
No.
We've had Olympians.
I don't even think we've had an Olympian.
Severn. Four time. Dan Severn?
Well, he was an alternate. I think this is the first Olympian.
Was Costas an Olympian?
No.
Wow, maybe you're right. I think.
Maybe a couple of the boxers may have been.
But maybe.
Potentially.
That's interesting. Maybe it's our first Olympics.
It's interesting. Billy didn't go to the Olympics.
No.
And Dean didn't go to the Olympics.
Yeah, guys, if you could answer that, we'd appreciate it.
Might be interesting.
Check it out.
With all the different world champion boxers we've had, I don't think really any of them went to the Olympics.
Did Fennec?
I think maybe Jeff. I think Jeff might have won the bronze.
Okay.
I think he might have pulled one.
But so maybe we have one, but we definitely don't have a gold medalist.
Gold medalist.
Full boy.
So, guys, remember to you know, we really appreciate your support. Best way for us to grow is if you share it and let your people know what we're doing, and kind of, you know, if you've got someone that you think would be interested, just let them know.
Tag them.
Yeah. Subscribe to the show. It's free. iTunes, SoundCloud, Stitcher, and
YouTube.
YouTube will be coming back shortly.
Yeah. Follow me, Johnny Stavko, Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, Tristan and Cannell.
Tristan Cannell leaves a quick 5-star review on iTunes. I love that. There's a couple of quick new reviews.
Did you write them down? If we didn't write them down, we'll get them next episode.
But
they got me through.
Some stunning ones, yeah.
Yeah,
some great ones.
When I read the reviews, I haven't done them in a while. The first thing I did was I went to you, Tristan, and I asked. I was like, you know, sometimes our friends write those. But do you know so and so? And you're like, no. I was like, man, it was so good. I kind of needed it. I was kind of, you know, I was dragging on a Sunday, just going through the motions. And I read that one. I was like, oh,
pick your spirits up.
Awesome, man. Yeah. So we appreciate it, guys. And if you just happen to stumble upon this episode because Steve posted it and you're not subscribed to the show, we'd love for you to go to SoundCloud and iTunes, like Tristan said, subscribe to the show, and then communicate with us on social media. See what you like about the show. And if you have any questions or want to talk to anyone, send us an email at info@thevisionboardpodcast.com.
For sure. Guys, you enjoy your week wherever you are in the world. We really appreciate it. I think, you know, I was looking at the stats last night. I haven't had my parents' home country Mauritius listening.
So 20 countries.
I was like, no more. It was more like 34. 20?
Yeah, that's crazy.
So wherever we are around the world, we really appreciate it, whether it's sunrise or sunset, you know, and we appreciate it.
I want to share one last story before we get out of here. So we recorded Steve here, and I've been at this gym for 3 years, and when I first moved to Australia, I was on a visa, so I couldn't work like a full, I couldn't run a business. So I chose a sales job, and it was the most humbling thing I've ever done, and it was in this gym, standing on George Street, passing flyers out, and that was it. It was pretty humiliating at the time.
Yeah.
And where we recorded Steve at, as we usher him through the health club, and people are taking pictures with him as he comes down here to get interviewed on our show that we created, it's connected right to that sales office.
Wow.
So it's pretty cool.
Connect the dots, brother.
Yeah. So we're just only getting better and stronger. We appreciate the support, man. It means a lot to us.
Yeah. And if anyone has, we've been kicked out of our studio. Yeah. So we need a new studio. So if anyone out there listening has a studio we can record from.
Yes.
In the Sydney CBD. But we're not being too picky.
Yeah.
But if you can do that for us and, you know, shout out, you know, we'd be very appreciative.
Yeah, we'll definitely take care of you. So that's a real, real request.
Yeah, for sure. Guys, you have a great week, and we'll speak to you soon.
Peace.
Welcome to the Vision Board Podcast, stories of success from around the world.
You guys are scratching a niche, and that's why this podcast has become popular and successful, is because you guys are scratching an itch. You're enjoying it, and you're also benefiting from the knowledge that people are dropping.
I've never met the person in my life, including my parents, that was able to outwill me about me.
Whatever profession you're in, you need to keep working harder. You know, nothing comes easy these days, and, you know, you'll get knocked down, but get back up, that counts, so just keep working hard at it.
You know, you guys said you do stuff, you ask things that aren't Googleable. You guys are two for two.
There's never been a time in my life where anybody ever was able to tell me who I was more than I knew who I was.
To join our vision and follow the journey, please subscribe to the Vision Board Podcast via iTunes, SoundCloud, and Stitcher.